Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. We are your hosts, Jamie and John. I'm Jamie and you're John.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder, man. Hope you're doing well. It's it's been a minute.
I do what I can. We appreciate you guys dropping in today. This is a very fascinating case that we're going to be discussing, and so much going on in the world. Hopefully you can come here and get a true crime fix with something that's not impacting your day-to-day or flooding your newsfeed.
Yeah, this is a case especially that you've probably never heard of before. I know I haven't. And there's not a lot out there. I know there's one documentary that we'll talk about. But other than that, there's not a lot about this case.
Let's be honest. There's nothing out there in English about this case.
Yeah, I don't speak Spanish. So yeah,
there are subtitles in the documentary, though. So that was good. I'm very thankful for that. But yeah, so we're excited to dig into this. We told a lot of people at CrimeCon that we try to cover cases other people don't. So here we are.
We're living up to that word for sure. So yeah, man, I just do want to say thank you to everyone who has joined us over on Patreon. If you have not already done so, we would love for you to check it out. You get a bonus episode each and every month on the first day of the month that is exclusive to Patreon members. And you also get early ad-free content as well. So it's a great way to get more True Crime Cast and early True Crime Cast.
Yeah, and we got a big backlog there as well. Been on Patreon for almost as long as we've been around. I want to give a thank you to Audiology Student from Miami, which is the name of the person on Apple Podcasts that gave us a 5-star review. It says, I love to listen to them as people, but know that I'm getting good, solid content. They never disappoint. I don't know why I went full Appalachian there. This is Audiology Student from Miami, not from Bell County.
That's, yeah. But no, thank you so much. That's awesome.
Yeah, John, let's not waste any more time.
All right, man. I'm going to ask for your all's forgiveness before we jump into this one. This has some names that may be a little difficult for me, maybe Jamie, to pronounce. So just apologies off the bat. I'm trying my best, folks.
Yeah, please be patient with us. We are doing our very best, and most of the names here are not names that we say every day.
All right, man. Why don't you get the ball rolling?
We're going to be talking about Rafael Henrique Miguel. He was born July 9th of 1996 in the São Paulo region of Brazil to his parents, João and Miriam. He also had two sisters, one older and one younger, so he's the middle kid. And this family was extremely close and loving, which, you know, just makes Rafael's story even more heartbreaking. As a kid, he became famous for being in a commercial where he played a kid in a grocery store who demanded that his mom buy broccoli.
Lame.
Yeah, I've never seen a kid do that, but I get that it could be good marketing. So he got his in with the commercials, and from there, Rafael went on to be in several TV shows and some made-for-TV movies in Brazil.
I've never seen a commercial for a vegetable, you know? Like, other than V8,
like, who's
that's
paying
the
for
only
that?
Thing I could ever think of.
Like, the vegetable people paying for that?
Farmers?
Probably the government, maybe? I don't know. He became very well-known with younger audiences across South America. In 2006, when he was just 10, he was in a miniseries called JK, where he played a character named Antenor. That same year, he joined the cast of Telenueva's Cristal, playing the role of Bettino. He was in several other shows over the years, and in 2013, he played Paco on the Telenueva Chiquitas. I think I did pretty good.
I mean, that was great. Now, here's my turn. So, one of the kids watching those shows was named Isabella Matias. Isabella's parents were named Paulo and Vanessa, and they actually met at a bar where Paulo worked. Paulo was already married when he met Vanessa, but Vanessa said she could not stay away from him. This is, one of those bad situations that got worse, I guess.
Yeah, you know? It definitely could have been. And with what we know about different types of grooming and and situations where relationships aren't completely consent from both parties. It's troubling to hear that.
Vanessa was very young when she became pregnant with Isabella, and even after Isabella was born, Paulo continued a relationship with his other family. Vanessa believed he would eventually leave that family to join their family permanently, and Paulo let her believe that for years and didn't tell her otherwise. So at some point she had convinced herself of this to be true, but you know, after years, you'd have to face the reality. It's not happening. When Isabella was 5, Vanessa and Paulo had a son. Vanessa hoped a son would bring Paulo to their family, but he still spent more time with his other family where he had 2 sons with that other marriage.
And just to clear that up, in case it's not clear, he continued seeing Vanessa, obviously, and having another kid with Vanessa. It's not like he just went back to his family full time and distanced himself from Vanessa and Isabella. But Isabella would say that she never had a good relationship with her dad. She always felt rejected by him. I mean, which I kind of get. That's the way Vanessa felt as well. He came and went more than he showed up, I think. He never let the two families meet or interact with each other at all. The other family had a better house, nicer stuff, and the children went to better schools. Isabella's family lived in a small house that was kind of an extension of a chop shop that Paulo owned, and a chop shop is where you deal with vehicles and replace parts, kind of like a collision service, but sometimes selling the parts.
Almost like a junkyard kind of thing.
Yeah, so not a chop shop. He's not selling like cuts of beef, right? It's vehicles.
Right.
This is a really small house. Isabella said that she often felt like she was being held captive. On top of that, Paulo and Vanessa had a really rough relationship. Like I said, she was very dependent on having him in her life, and he seemed to come and go as he pleased and was never very kind. He was really aggressive, possessive, and at times he got abusive with Vanessa. Paulo had a reputation around town for being a tough guy. He walked around with a gun in his waistband so everybody could see it. Nobody messed with Paulo. People even said that if thieves saw Paulo go into a business, they wouldn't target those places because they were afraid that he knew the people inside and would come after him.
This makes me think of the American song Big John that people often sing to me. Like, I think if you don't know me, I do look like a big old crazy man maybe, but I'm just a big teddy bear, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if I do know you and I still think you're a...
Fair enough. But he's bad
Leroy Brown.
Yeah. He's running the chop shop. He wears a gun everywhere he goes. Yeah. People know this guy and he's not the friendliest of characters. So Isabella's mother worked in Paulo's chop shop for hours and hours a day. And one day she didn't come home. So the nanny had to stay with all the kids and everybody was wondering where Vanessa was. The next day, the following afternoon, she finally came back. But dude, she came back with a swollen eye, and she was wearing Paulo's clothes. So this is not looking good. So what happened was Paulo had attacked Vanessa simply because she went out with some of her friends. He took her to the junkyard and beat her for hours. He would routinely tell Vanessa that you must like getting hit, and openly talked about beating his wife. So he was also very abusive to Isabella. Eventually, Paulo took away all of Vanessa's independence, even taking her job, so she wasn't going to the chop shop anymore. She was only allowed to be at home and to be with the children all day long.
This is a pretty extreme domestic violence situation. Obviously, control is normally the big part of that. And Paulo insisted on being in control of everything that she did. So that included the abuse and gaslighting, and it was really not a good place for Vanessa. Neither was it a good place for Vanessa's kids. In 2018, something happened that would change the trajectory of Isabella's life. She spotted Rafael Miguel in her town and decided to connect with him on social media. From there, they started texting each other, and before you know it, they were texting every single day. They spent 2 months talking on the phone whenever Paulo wasn't around. Raphael had stepped away from acting and was teaching English in local schools. He loved his classes, loved his students, and they loved him, going above and beyond to make sure they got what they needed. He was really proud of the work that he was doing, and he was also thinking about going to film school with dreams of becoming an international filmmaker, maybe moving to Hollywood, maybe going to India. One day, as Isabella was leaving for school, she was with a friend who took her phone. The friend called Raphael and said, "Do you want to meet Isabella or what?" So Raphael said, "You know, we've been talking quite a bit." Yes. And he came to the school to finally meet Isabella in person. They sat there and talked for hours. And then the two of them shared their first kiss. From that moment on, Isabella was in love with Raphael Miguel. She said she never felt safe until she met Raphael.
Isabella had to start coming up with excuses in order to get away from the house to see Raphael without her controlling father finding out about this. But the abuse in the house was only just escalating. Isabella was not allowed to wear makeup. She was not allowed to have a boyfriend. That would definitely be off limits to her father. Her life was school, home, and nothing else. And when she was home, her father targeted her with his abuse. This is often seen in patterns of domestic violence and child abuse. And it's just awful. Like, one kid seems to get the brunt of it all. One time when her father came home to Isabella doing the dishes, he looked at her and said, "Good morning." And she simply said, "Good morning" back. But then he hit her in the back, called her disrespectful, and actually took the dish that she was washing and hit her over the head with it, which broke the dish. Vanessa knew about her daughter's relationship with Raphael, and she was actually participating in that. She would help hide the relationship from Paulo for a 6-month period of time. And in that time, Raphael told Isabella that his goal was to move out of his parents' house and to move in with her. Well, obviously, they're not going to be able to move into her house either. So she loved him, and he had big dreams of moving to Boston, and he wanted to take Isabella with him. So now is the time that she was going to have to tell her father about Raphael, and I cannot imagine this would go well.
Yeah, it definitely didn't. When we get back from the break, we'll break down what Paulo did when he found out about Raphael and how that leads us to the main part of our story. As a way to hopefully break the news to Paulo without him freaking out, Vanessa told him that Isabella had wanted to go on a date. She didn't say she had a boyfriend, didn't say that she had been seeing this guy, just that she wanted to go on a date with a boy. Paulo lost his mind, flew into a rage, screaming that Isabella wouldn't be allowed to date until she was at least 20 years old. One evening, her dad came to pick her up from a play rehearsal. He told her that her mom was in an accident, that she had fallen down the stairs, which, again, with...
It's like the quintessential thing to say, right?
Right. As soon as Isabella got in the car, she knew that this was not about her mom. Immediately, her dad started screaming at her, asking about Raphael, hitting the steering wheel with his fist out of anger, and then ended up taking her cell phone. When they got home, Paulo turned on Vanessa, beating her as well and dislocating her shoulder. He came back to Isabella and demanded the password to get on her cell phone. He eventually got it and unlocked the phone, and that's when he saw everything, including the many messages that Isabella shared with Raphael and the intimate conversations that they had. So it went from her asking to go on a date to showing that she had been sneaking behind his back and having this relationship for months.
From that day on, Isabella was even more restricted. By this time, she was 18 years old. She had graduated from school, so he really had no reason to keep her home, and she had no legal reason to stay there other than the fear of his retaliation. She was home all day. She was doing chores with no phone, no communication to anyone in the outside world. By June of 2019, she hadn't left her house for 10 months. Like at my age, not leaving the house for 10 months almost sounds like thank you, you know, but when you're that age, that's the only thing you want to do. You've got to get out and have other relationships other than with the people that live in your home, especially when some of those people are monsters.
And that would be your choice, John's choice to stay home. This was
a captivity.
Isabella's choice. This was very much, I mean, I don't know if the formal definition of kidnapping allows it to happen in your own home, but that's exactly what this is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So after the first 8 months of this 10-month span, Vanessa had begun letting Isabella use her cell phone in order to be able to speak with Raphael, but that was only allowed to occur when Paulo was at work or with his other family, which is just a whole other family dynamic I'd kind of forgotten about until just now. But while being held captive, Isabella developed some severe issues, insomnia, depression, and eating disorder. All of this happens because of a result of the extreme trauma and abuse. When Raphael found out about all the things that was happening to Isabella, he was desperate to rescue her. So he started making more serious plans for the two of them to run away together. Raphael even came to the house one time to speak to Paulo directly, but Vanessa intervened and would not let him in. She knew that this would go horribly if it happened. So there was a festival coming up in town, and Isabella saw this as an opportunity to see Raphael again. Vanessa decided to go to the festival with them so she could help cover for Isabella and to be on the lookout for Paulo. On June 8th, 2019, Isabella was so excited to see Raphael that she had her friend take photos of their reunion. And they were so happy to be together that they told each other vows and moved the promise rings they gave to each other to their married hands. Isabella went to bed so happy that night, but the next morning, June 9th, 2019, she woke up with an anxious feeling of dread and restlessness.
Yeah, this is, I mean, a horrible situation all the way around. I feel like Raphael is trying to do the right thing here, trying to make sure Isabella is safe. A lot of guys would just run away from her and break that relationship off at this point. And I also don't know that there would be anything wrong with that, but you would want to see Isabella getting help and see her getting safe. And they were so excited to see each other. Obviously, this isn't a legal marriage when they exchanged vows at a festival, but to them, this was a symbol of where their relationship was going to be. Isabella felt like she had to get out of the house that day, so she got Vanessa's phone, texted Raphael to meet her at a small square that was near her home. As she left, she saw her dad pulling up to the house, but she didn't turn around. She didn't want him to stop her. She just wanted to be gone, let him go in, do his own thing, whether it was in the chop shop or in the house. She got to the square, and then she sat down on the sidewalk crying. Just, again, like you said, she woke up feeling something bad's going on, something bad's going to happen, and Raphael showed up and saw her crying. She told Raphael that she didn't want to go home, even though her mom was calling her over and over. She knew what was going to happen when she got home, and she didn't want to get beaten up again. When she couldn't get a hold of Isabella, Vanessa called Raphael's mom, Miriam. Raphael's mom called the couple, and they explained the entire situation. So now Raphael and his parents are in the know for how abusive Paulo is to at least this family. I assume he was abusive to both. Miriam told the two to stay where they were and that Raphael's father would come to pick them up. So this is a situation, John, where from the outside looking in, yes, somebody else knows what's happening. A responsible male adult is going to intervene and hopefully help this family get the help that they need from law enforcement or whoever he chose to go to. But at the same time, in the back of my head, knowing if this doesn't work when she does have to go home, this is going to be worse than it's ever been before.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where it has aspects of being positive, where a darkness has come to light and now there's more people that know about it. And sometimes just that is enough to stop the abuse. But there's the extreme where sometimes this will just infuriate the other. And if she's not going to escape this home, it's going to make it a lot worse for her, right? So it could either go one of two ways.
It's a high risk, high reward situation.
So they got together again, Raphael, his parents, and their plan was to help Isabella to calm down and then to take her home. Isabella thought that if she came home with Raphael and two other well-intentioned adults, that she might be safe from her father. When they arrived at Isabella's house, Paulo's car was not in the driveway, but Paulo is the one who answered the door. Could you imagine the heart-sinking feeling of seeing him when you've kind of mentally prepared yourself for him not to be home because you don't see his car, but then he answers it?
I think the moment of relief of not seeing his car would be a big moment of you can breathe a little bit. But yeah, I think that makes him opening the door that much more shocking and that much more terrifying.
And he was angry. He immediately took Isabella and pulled her inside the house and then tried to slam the door. But Raphael got in the way and tried to keep the door open, saying, "Can we just talk?" Kudos to this kid. I mean, I say kid, and he's a young adult, but like everything you know about this man, he had the bravery to try to, you know, wedge his way into the house and talk to what he knows is a very violent man. So kudos to him.
And Raphael was fairly well known in the area, again, from his time in TV, but he wasn't like a big dude.
Yeah. Paulo said back to him, "Talk about what? There's nothing to talk about." And then he took out his gun. And this wasn't just to show and to intimidate Raphael. No, he actually shot Raphael and his parents 13 times in total. Each of them fell to the ground, and Paulo fled to his car, which he had hidden down the street. So Isabella ran to Raphael's side, and he was held by Isabella as he laid there and died. And his mother and father were also on the ground dying beside him. All three of these people died before first responders had a chance to arrive.
I use the phrase high risk, high reward, but obviously the risk here is beyond comprehension. And they went there to help. They knew he was abusive. They knew his reputation around town too, that he was always carrying a firearm and that he was certainly capable of doing this. So I'm sure they were cautious in their approach. But if you think about it, not only did Paulo do this and shoot them, he parked away so that they wouldn't suspect that he was there. So this was all kind of like a big trap from Paulo to do this. The shooting and Paulo's run were all caught on security cameras up until this point. So there's no doubt that he's the one that pulled the trigger and he fled the scene. A coworker by the name of Wandry Lee met Paulo at a bus station and drove him to a friend's house nearby. This woman, friend of Paulo's, gave him a Tupperware bowl filled with ham and cheese and bread and said that he couldn't stay with her, but she wanted to give him food so he would be okay. He told her to take him to a city that was about an hour away. At some point along the way, they stopped for coffee, and while she was inside the gas station, Wanderley saw Paulo and the crime on TV. It had already circulated to authorities of what happened at Paulo's house, and she now had an idea, a better idea, of why he was on the run. This had been a situation where she wanted to help him out, and he told her that he needed to hide from police, so she was aware, but to see it, of course, is a completely different thing. Almost immediately, the media turned on Isabella. Rumors started spreading that this was her fault, that she was potentially the shooter, and that she must have been pregnant, and that's why she killed Raphael's family, because they were coming to get her and getting her to leave her family home to come with them so they could be a part of the baby's lives. So these rumors and stories started circulating, and the focus here was really on Isabella, not Paulo.
Isn't that wild? I mean, why would they... I don't understand how one's brain gets there. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, yeah. Anyway, just totally insane following of logic there for me. So the different police departments in the area started having a competition over who could catch Paulo first.
Again, they had the footage to show that he was the shooter, but publicly they weren't necessarily showing that. They were showing the car fleeing but they were trying to pin it, at least socially, on Isabella.
And was that their tactic to kind of throw Paulo off? I mean, is that the intention there? Or is that just the public's response to only seeing limited
video? I would imagine that's a public's response. I don't think this was intentional at all.
All right. So on June 12th, so this would be 3 days after the murders, they were able to get into Paulo's chop shop and do a search. So a chop shop, at least for me, I think of like any legal place where they take in stolen cars, and it is kind of a junkyard, but it's of stolen merchandise. It's not necessarily an up and up.
I think that just calling it a chop shop denotes that it's a shady place.
So they discovered parts with serial numbers that had been scraped off and tools that were able to make new license plates. They noticed an invoice on the desk for a cell phone that was actually purchased by the lady you mentioned earlier, Wanderley. Plus, the machine used to swipe credit cards was purchased under the name of Eduardo. Now, these were the best leads that police were able to obtain from that search. So, they visited a place called Eduardo's Pizzeria. This was actually a place known in town where Paulo had spent a lot of time. They discovered a bank transfer for a large amount of money to Wanderley's account that was allegedly to get Paulo a lawyer. It was actually used to buy Paulo a bus ticket to a city near the border of Brazil and Paraguay called Ponta Pura. And this was a place that Paulo visited often because he could buy cheaper car parts there, turn around and sell them for more profit there in São Paulo. And it was also a common place for criminals to travel through.
So this is a place that he certainly knew well. And, you know, people around São Paulo knew him, but they knew him here too. In October of 2020, eventually, a year and 4 months after Rafael and his parents were killed, a journalist tipped off police that she had been sent a photo of Paulo working as a foreman on a farm in Paraguay. So he had gone across the border and was trying to start a new life. The police were sent to this farm in huge numbers, but when they got close to the farm, Paulo was told they were coming. So, of course, he jumped on the back of a truck, actually a watermelon truck, and fled to the airport. Police arrived just in time to watch the small plane take off and Paulo slip through their fingers yet again. I think of a movie when I hear about this. He jumps on a watermelon truck and they just missed him. They get to the airport to see the plane take off. It's like, are these things, were they really that close so many times? And by all accounts, they were. In June of 2022, it had been nearly 3 years, and there was no sign of Paulo. The police started to believe that he would come back to his hometown, where he had two families and a lot of kids. So they started embedding themselves in the community to hear stories for when they would find out that he may be coming back. So they're going undercover, John, to catch this guy potentially coming back to town. And while three murders is awful, this seems like more of an effort to catch somebody in organized crime. But either way, I'm glad they were doing it. One day, police got a call that Paulo was back in town and that he was at a local hotel. Police reviewed the security footage from that particular hotel, and there he was. Paulo, wearing a hat, walking with a cane and a small limp when he was out in public in an effort to somewhat disguise himself. Police were able to get a key to his room, and they entered with their guns drawn. Paulo's response was simply applauding them and clapping and saying, "Congratulations, you caught me."
Yeah, this guy's a psychopath.
Cocky piece of crap.
Yeah. So he was questioned by police, and of course he said that he did not shoot Rafael or his family. And he said that he went on the run to protect the person that he loves the most. So by saying that, he was implying that Isabella was the real culprit, saying that she took the revolver and killed Rafael and his parents. So this would go to trial finally on October the 10th of last year, 2024. And the family was hoping he would receive at least 30 years for each murder. So a total of 90 years is what they were hoping for. Paulo went in and he denied that he did anything wrong, that no one saw him with a gun, and that he was only in the hotel working as a handyman, and he was actually not on the run. Both Isabella and Vanessa testified about the abuse that they had endured at his hands, and that they were controlled by Paulo over the years, and even testified about what happened on that day that had to be so difficult to talk about all of this. In fact, Isabella was just terrified to speak about what was going on with her father actually being able to be there and look at her. So she requested to be removed from the courtroom while she gave her testimony. And thank God the judge granted this request. It's something that happens a lot in particularly with child abuse testimony, but it's up to the judge. And dude, some judges are quick to say, absolutely, of course, you can be questioned privately. And it's recorded, of course, and everything's on record, but they don't have to sit there and look at the person who is alleged to have abused them. I've seen several cases where the judges were not okay with that, and they made them testify in front of the alleged. And my heart breaks for kids who have to be asked these questions anyway, but especially in front of and looking at the person who may or may not have done some evil things.
They're re-traumatized in a lot of ways just having to see that person. She hadn't seen him in years.
It's really cool. I know I don't want to get too far off topic, but there are, you know, like big burly looking motorcycle dudes who are actually big old teddy bears like me, and they will volunteer to help be with kids when they're questioned, especially if it has to be in the open courtroom with the alleged. And they'll even be allowed to like to stand next to the kid as like the kid's very own bodyguards, just to kind of help put the kid at ease. And if you have ever done that, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but they're saints among us. They're really good dudes.
Love that.
While Isabella was testifying, though, Paulo was so angry, so he couldn't sit in there and see his daughter testify. So this sent him into a rage. He actually tore his clothes and urinated on the wall of the holding cell that he was in. This guy is a lunatic. I mean, have you ever been so mad that you just want to piss?
I've heard of getting pissed off, but not like that. And, you know, this is not going to help your case of showing you don't have anger and abuse issues, or B, is he trying to get some kind of insanity plea on the table?
Yeah.
I really don't know. It's a wild thing to behold.
Well, this, you know, his fit of rage continued. He ended up firing his attorney, and this actually caused a mistrial. So both women would have to re-testify about everything they went through and everything they saw that day.
Just horrific. Again, they're having to be re-traumatized for another time because he fired his attorney. This time, the trial began on May 29th of this year, 2025. Paulo tried to argue that he should be in the room when Isabella testified and that he had the right to face his accuser. But a judge ruled that he would have to leave again, so she was brought in to testify while he was in the holding cell. Isabella and Vanessa testified again, and then it was Paulo's turn who took the stand in his own defense. He said he could never do this crime, that he had never met Raphael, didn't know who he was aside from his minimal TV fame, didn't know his parents, and had never seen them. He claimed he wasn't even armed on the day of the shooting, which again, everybody in town knew that he was pretty much always armed. He was erratic. He yelled at everybody in the courtroom. I think he was the definition of a hostile witness. He claimed that it was a homeless man on the street that shot and killed these people on his porch or in his front lawn.
Yeah, and this is after he claimed that his own daughter did it.
His own lawyers tried to get him to stop rambling. Obviously, he's making himself look worse and worse, and he wouldn't listen. He denied he had ever done anything wrong, which is the classic case of a narcissist who abuses people.
Absolutely. So the following day, the jury came back and they found Paulo guilty. I think there's no surprises there. He was sentenced to 98 years. So they got what they were hoping plus some more. And this was for the triple homicide. So when the sentence was handed down, you would think this would be kind of a relief for Isabella, but she appeared to struggle. She had to wrap her head around the fact that this convicted killer was also her father. She would go on to say that, you know, she was his daughter, and a father is supposed to love his children and wondered, but why was it so hard to love me? So she had kind of inserted herself into the rationale for her father doing what he did. I mean,
and somewhat blaming herself. And, yeah, and kids do that, right?
It's,
like,
it's very common. I just wish, I hope that as time moves on, she's able to see herself as the victim of him, and that his actions had nothing to do with her, but his own demons and his own evil desires. But after it all, she still finds comfort in the poems and stories that Raphael wrote about her. She said that he saw who I was before I became that woman. You know, I hope she is able to find some peace in her life. I hope Vanessa does the same. And I'm glad this guy's going to be locked up for over 100 years. I pray that there's not a way for him to get out early. Of course, it being in Brazil, I'm not familiar with Brazilian law. So who's to say that after 20 years or so, he may, you know, I hope that's not the case, but it sounds like he's going to serve his time and not be eligible for parole.
Yeah, this seemed like one of those situations. They so narrowly missed him so many times that I was concerned the story was going to end with him getting off the hook on a technicality. Thankfully, that is not what happened. He was convicted, and again, you're a foster. Yeah, you work in the foster care system, and I've bombarded you with questions while I was a foster parent. And this was something I always struggled with, of kids who needed to be moved to a safe place, but they desperately wanted to be with their parents who were abusive. And I think you can't, it's hard to believe, and people would look and say, oh, she must have been lying, she feels guilty or something like that. Until you see it in that child's face and realize what's going on, it's really tough to understand, but it is a deep, deep psychological connection to the people you've known as your parents your whole life.
What's wild, man, is I've seen so many cases where a young kid, 6, 7 years old, will be very traumatically hurt and abused. And for a lot of, you know, there's no other way to say it other than they get stuck mentally at that age. Mm-hmm. So even as a 13, 14-year-old adolescent, they still cognitively function at a much younger age, and it's not because of a delay, like an organic delay in their brain that's like a permanent injury. It's just because of the trauma. And I think for a lot of ways, this young woman was an adult, but probably still very much trapped in the mind of a much younger person because of all that she had to go through under his hands.
I don't remember how this case came on my radar. I saw it on some kind of social media when the trial was happening this past summer and put it on our list, and was absolutely shocked to see that there was no other podcast covering it, that all the documentaries were in Spanish. And by all the documentaries, I mean the one documentary was in Spanish. So this is an important story. I think it tells us a lot about domestic violence, about the behavior of somebody who does that, but also kind of what the victim, the survivors, are going through. And of course, Rafael was well known throughout Brazil for his acting, and it was a big blow there to lose him and his family, as they were well known, and obviously they were well intentioned trying to help Isabella. So tragic story all the way around. Rafael and his parents were certainly not the only victims here, and I hope Paulo has a very unpleasant stay in prison.
Oh yeah, I hope every day is miserable. So I don't know, that I shouldn't say that. That's not very Christian of me, but he is getting the justice that he earned and deserves. So I don't think that I want him to have a pleasant time.
I mean, there's a line there, of course, but glad he's behind bars. I'm glad justice is served here as much as it could have been. Obviously, nothing's going to bring Rafael and his family back, and the trauma is still there for all that he left in his wake. But we see that Vanessa and Isabella are in a place where they can have safety and security and hopefully start to live healthy lives.
And I hope they do, man. There's hope for everyone. There's even hope for Paulo to turn his life around. So yeah, I pray that there's hope divvied out to everybody there.
The ever the optimist, are you, John?
Well, I don't deserve all the blessings I have. So anyway, all right, man, that's going to wrap this one up. Guys, again, if you have listened to everything that we've put out and find yourself wanting just a little bit more, We have almost 8 years worth of exclusive monthly episodes available on patreon.com for as little as $3 a month. And that is much less than a cup of coffee these days. And we have never changed the price in 8 years. So inflation can suck it when True Crime Cast is involved.
I have nothing to, I was going to say something to follow that up, but I think we leave it there, John. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, man. All right. We love you guys. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.